Welcome to Post View.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to the Reed Smith Kelly Seminar. FTC needs industry privacy guidance for new report. During the presentation, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. Afterwards, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. At that time, if you have a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. Should you require operator assistance at any time, please press star 0. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded Thursday, December 16, 2010. I would now like to turn the conference over to Mark Melodia. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Claudine. My name is Mark Melodia. I'm the co-head of Reed Smith's Global Privacy Practice, and I am joined today by several of my colleagues throughout the world, and in particular here in the U.S., to deliver what may be either the best or worst time teleseminar in history. About an hour ago, the Department of Commerce released its privacy report. We knew it was coming, but we didn't know until quite recently that it was coming at 11 a.m. This morning, an hour before our scheduled FTC privacy report. We are going to do our best over the next hour to read and talk at you so that Amy Mushawar, one of my colleagues in D.C., will at least give you the highlights of the Department of Commerce report at the end of this presentation, giving her a full 55 minutes to read it. And I will, having looked at it briefly myself, will give you a little bit of an overview here in the introduction. We may have another teleseminar to deal with the Department of Commerce report. Our focus will remain today on the FTC report, which has plenty in it to keep all of us busy for the next hour. During the next hour, we are going to spend about 50 minutes talking at you in listen-only mode, as Claudine just told us. However, we have reserved 10 minutes at the end for questions, and obviously all of us are available for further follow-up with any one of you. I've told you who I am. Let me tell you who you are, because obviously the goal here is to allow for anonymous participation on your part, including the questions at the end, which will be by first name only. But I do want to give you a sense of who else is on the line generically. We have about 125 clients on the line, banks, healthcare. In other words, we have some seriously already regulated industries. We also have global consumer product companies, major brands. We have media, not in the sense of reporting on this event. Hopefully, it's meant to be a private call with clients, but our media clients and others in the advertising and technology fields. In addition, we have a number of educational institutions, think tanks, and the like with interest in these issues. It's a broad cross-section, as it should be, because, as you know, if you've looked at this FTC report, or if you don't know, you'll find out when you hear from our speakers today, it's a broad report covering a broad range of issues and potentially industries. A few more logistics at the outset. Not only do we invite questions at the end by telephone through the operator, but we are doing this via live meeting. So if you are participating via the live meeting internet program, you can submit questions as we go, and we will do our best to field those as we move along. If you're going to do that, you click on the Q&A button on the toolbar located at the top of your screen. Then you get a text box where you type your question, and then you submit your question by clicking the Ask button. And we will do our best, again, to feed those questions to the speakers as we go along. So let's get started. You know, this call is certainly well-timed. We have had the FTC report for a couple of weeks, and we've had the Commerce Department report for almost a couple of hours. Let me just give you the quickest of overviews of the Department of Commerce report, which most of you probably have not yet seen. it appears to be different in significant respects from the FTC report, which Amy can try to tease out some of those differences at the end. But the four sort of policy recommendation categories for what the Department of Commerce calls its dynamic privacy framework are as follows. One, they call for an enhancement of consumer trust online through recognition of, quote, revitalized fair information practice principles. So that sort of sounds pretty familiar. Two, encourage the development of voluntary, enforceable privacy codes of conduct. I love those words, voluntary and enforceable in the same sentence. Privacy codes of conduct in specific industries through collaborative efforts of multi-stakeholder groups, the FTC, and a privacy policy office within the Department of Commerce, which is one of the things that they're calling for in this report. And then those are sort of the sticks. The carrots are, number three, encourage global interoperability. That sounds promising, something that certainly we and our clients have been looking for a long time. And then potentially another carrot to this is number four, ensure nationally consistent security breach notification rules. You know, having just gotten off a call about the still inconsistent security breach notification rules, that would be welcome too. We, like many on this call, have faced a lot of those issues for clients. We've probably handled over 200 breach scenarios, and we've also seen litigation. Reed Smith has been involved in defending over 65 consumer and employee class actions brought out of security breaches through the years. So anything that can be done to clarify these areas is certainly good for us and our clients, and we encourage. You know, with this sort of complexity that we have nationally, of course, it gets exacerbated internationally. And I have on the line with me today, although they're not on the speaker's agenda, Cynthia O'Donohue, who co-heads the privacy group with me worldwide, and Nick Tyler with her in the London office. Nick came from in-house at a major pharmaceutical company where he handled privacy issues and used to be with the UK regulator on privacy issues. I raise that in case any of your questions start to skip across the pond. We may reach out. They're our helpline if we get issues of a non-US nature later in the call. It's clear from the FTC report, which is going to be our main focus, that the FTC believes that industry has to do better, and that it's up to industry to relieve the information burden that currently rests with the consumers. And we've heard from a number of people, both clients and more generally in the privacy community, that they're alarmed by the report, and we've heard a little bit of Chicken Little, sky is falling talk among some industry professionals. We don't necessarily share that view. There certainly are going to be challenges ahead, but we think that we, with our team of former government staffers and in-house lawyers and engineers, that we can help you meet those challenges. And we know we've worked with many of you on this call. We know that you're capable with your in-house teams of doing so as well. There are some things to worry about, though, in this FTC report. My perspective on all this is as a litigator, as a class action defense lawyer, and as somebody who deals with the FTC and state attorneys general in the enforcement arena. And from my perspective, the discussion of harm is particularly galling in this report. They look to expand the definition of harm to include items such as reputational harm and even the fear of being monitored or simply having data out there. And, you know, that sort of inchoate and intangible harm is, of course, exactly what we have been fighting in the litigation to date. And so from a litigator's perspective, there are things that are really intolerable about the report as drafted. Regardless of what you think of various aspects of this, the one thing we want to stress is that we urge you not to suffer whatever bothers you most in this report. Don't suffer about it silently. It has been quite clear from the FTC that they genuinely want meaningful industry guidance. Now, whether they will listen to it, whether they will change things, that obviously remains to be seen. But there has to be a way to generate some intelligent, forceful industry comment. And I realize it's not an industry, and that's an issue. But whatever industry groups, whatever existing privacy groups you are a part of, please, over the next week, talk to them about what are they doing, because I'm not hearing a lot. There aren't enough discussions yet going on about presenting comment over the next several weeks that we have to do this. Let's not sort of do the red flags routine again, and only after passage or finality of this report panic and try to push back through lobbying efforts and do what we can at that point. We have it in front of us. Let's do our best to respond and find ways. And I understand the need for anonymity and coverage and, hunting with the pack. But that all seems like something that can be done. So with that little speech, and quite frankly, that really is our main point today, other than trying to get you information about this report, is please get involved. Let me turn now to our speakers. We have three speakers. We have Chris Swalina, Paul Bond, and Amy Mushawar. All three are talented U.S. privacy lawyers and colleagues, active in IAPP and other industry organizations. Each has some unique characteristics and background. Paul is my colleague here in Princeton. Paul is going to be speaking about privacy by design and some other issues that he's very involved with. He really leads a lot of our U.S. compliance efforts for clients. Amy comes from an engineering background and is based in D.C., does a lot of work involving pending legislation, and in particular has industry focus and expertise in the telecom area. And Chris comes from in-house, just joined us this year, from Intersections, and before that he was with ChoicePoint. So needless to say, Chris learned a few things about dealing with the FTC during his time in-house on privacy issues, and can help share some of that with you now. So I believe I turn it over now to Chris. Thanks.
Thanks, Mark. You were right that the FTC is critical of industry in the report, and indeed they say that explicitly. Industry must do better. They're also seemingly critical of those companies who already have substantial privacy programs in place. They point out that these efforts in privacy are encouraging, but that companies do not adequately address consumer privacy interests today. So the report really begins with this overarching point that privacy needs to be a basic consideration, similar to keeping track of costs and revenues or strategic planning, needs to be a basic consideration in your company. What will become of this? We'll talk a little bit more about that later. Amy will address that, but the report does say in the beginning that they created the report and it is intended to inform policymakers as they develop laws. And they're also intending that the report motivates industry to develop more robust self-regulatory guidelines. How did we get here? The FTC developed this report based on the privacy roundtables that they held late 2009, early 2010. There was a series of about three privacy roundtables. And based this report on the major themes and findings that emerged during those roundtables. They concluded at those roundtables there were industry participants. There were quite a number of consumer advocates as well. The FTC concluded at those roundtables that the scope of collection and the use of consumer data is immense. They also felt that informed consent isn't really working because consumers don't understand what they're consenting to. They also felt that consumers have made clear that privacy is important to them, although one commissioner questions this later in his concurring opinion, which I'll address towards the end. The FTC did acknowledge that there were benefits enabled by all of this flow of data, but they also complicated things by saying there is a blurring distinction now between PII and de-identified data. Overall, the report was basically critical of the now notice and choice system that we have, and as Mark pointed out, the harm-based models of privacy that we have today. The report spends considerable time going through its historical and recent privacy initiatives, but they say that more enforcement is needed. And this sentiment was echoed at a recent IAPP seminar. Commissioner Julie Brill made the comment that you can never have too many cops on the beat, and that was in response to a question about whether private litigation should be enough, and that this new framework wasn't necessarily necessary, and her point was we need more enforcement. In the report, the FTC spends some time on self-regulation and where we are today with self-regulation, pretty critical of that, which I think is a little different than the report that was issued today. The FTC thinks that industry efforts to address privacy through self-regulation have been too slow, and that they, up to now, self-regulation has not provided adequate and meaningful protection. Again, Julie Brill has made the comment that that self-regulation needs to have teeth. There needs to be an enforcement mechanism, or else it doesn't work. So the scope, as Mark mentioned, the scope is very broad, and it goes beyond the existing sector-specific legal framework that we have today that exists, for example, if you are a financial institution. It applies to almost everybody. It applies to all online and offline commercial entities that collect, maintain, share, or otherwise, and this is the important part, consumer data that can be reasonably linked to a specific consumer computer or device. So as you see there with that quote, it is no longer PII is not the thing or personally identifiable information. It is now quite broader. At least that's what the FTC is urging. Also, another place the FTC makes this the scope broad is that it applies to those companies who interact with consumers or not. So the FTC's point of view is it doesn't matter if you interact directly with consumers. If you have information pertaining to consumers, you're in. The report also, as I mentioned this, touched on this, the report suggests that these privacy protections should not be just limited to PII, but also to any data that could re-identify consumers. And the FTC's view is that technology now, as it is developed, has made this distinction between PII and non-PII irrelevant. There are three components to the framework, and they are, and we will take them in turn, they are privacy by design, consumer choice, and transparency. And so I'm going to turn over to Paul Bond right now, who will talk a bit about privacy by design and consumer choice.
Great. Thank you, Chris. Next slide, please. We had gotten a question, which is, why not adopt the EU model, given the direction that's presaged in this FTC report? I think a couple things to just quickly mention. The EU, there are actually multiple models of privacy within Europe, different nations implementing the basic principles of the directives.
in sometimes significantly different ways. But in general, that tradition grows out of a human rights understanding of privacy, as opposed to our understanding of privacy, which is more based on common law and tends to default to businesses being able to own personal information, as opposed to those persons always being the owners of the information. That said, we internally at Reed Smith and with some colleagues at other firms in the government have been discussing the fact that, in fact, many of these recommendations are either explicitly or implicitly designed to move us closer to the direction that's being taken in the rest of the world. That one of the benefits of moving in that direction would be to eventually, be able to have a greater, easier transfer of information, personal information among the U.S. and the rest of the world, and that, one thing that we could hope to draw out of this, and the FCC report makes it even a little more explicit in saying they're looking for interoperability. One of the carrots that we could hope would be associated with this stick would be an increasing recognition of the United States as an adequate data protection regime.
Well, that's right. This is Mark, and then I'm going to ask Cynthia from London to chime in on this good question as well, if she has a live mic. I think that's right, Paul. If we could have the U.S. recognized as part of a sea change in privacy, as being a safe jurisdiction by EU standards, and if the German and French and Spanish and other data protection authorities in those countries would so recognize and truly provide a safe harbor, which has been quite a misnomer so far, then that would be something to get. The other point I'd make as a litigator is, of course, the huge difference between our regimes is our litigation system. So unless there's going to be a sea change as well in our court system and class action system and attorney's fee shifting rules to mirror those of the EU, what we have right now is the worst of both worlds. We have a government entity saying harm is if you're worried, and yet we have private plaintiffs' lawyers circling looking to apply that standard for their own personal gain. And that is not an EU standard. That's a double standard. Cynthia, do you have anything to add?
I'm going to follow on from what Paul said. Basically, why not adopt the EU system? It seems to me that the FTC's paper goes some way towards that, and they seem to be blurring the distinction between, what historically has been called PII in the United States and what, of course, we called that personal data. But one of the big distinctions, of course, is that in the U.S., privacy tends to be regulated on a sectoral level, whereas, of course, here in the EU, it's much more of a universal human right, as what Paul mentioned. And I think there's this idea in the U.S. that the privacy rights in Europe are too great and create too much regulatory concerns and burdens for companies, certainly in relation to the transfer principles and data minimization and necessity for data retention purposes. There are certainly some overlaps with issues that are seen out of the U.S., but they seem to be driven from a different perspective. And what we're seeing from our, from looking at Europe to the United States is that the U.S. is still focused on consumer rights, as opposed to be, privacy and being a universal human right.
Well, and that's a great segue back here. The one thing that's been pointed out to me by our busy reader, Amy, of the Commerce Report, is that President Obama has called for a privacy bill of rights in the Commerce Report, perhaps would suggest a change, at least within the government, about that view, which Cynthia certainly accurately captured, at least as of a couple of hours ago, but perhaps the goal of the Commerce Report and
President Obama's call for a privacy bill of rights is going to change some of that. So, Paul, let's keep on task here.
Sure.
In terms of the FTC report, you're going to address privacy by design?
That's right. And privacy by design is a term that has been bandied about for a good long time. The FTC is adopting it, championing it here. Although the term may be new to some U.S. readers, this is consistent with guidance that the FTC has issued to businesses in their previous instructional papers. The point is, the FTC is tired of rounding up the horses once they're out. This is privacy by design is privacy while the horse is still in the stable. Closing the barn door while the horse is still there. Privacy from the ground up. Privacy in the DNA of business structures. It's kind of like trying to move resources from being firefighters to being building code inspectors. To mix in yet another analogy, the idea is collect only what you need, collect it for a specific purpose, as opposed to collecting lots of stuff and seeing later what you can do with it. Retaining personal information only as needed to fulfill the purpose. Adequately protecting it, of course, and then also safely disposing of it. I think all of these things are perspectives, as the FTC said in their report, that have continually been set forth to businesses as best practices, and there is an attempt here to move that yet further from, best practices in handouts to something with a greater force of law. Additionally, there's references to assigning personnel, training employees, conducting privacy reviews. I think if there's one change here, it's a change of emphasis from what has previously been put out by the FTC has largely been addressed to businesses in the flow of their operation. We know that you're not in the privacy business. Well, we know that you didn't start this business to fulfill privacy obligations, but since you're in business, here's a bunch of things that you should do. That's mainly what we've heard before. Now, there's much more of a focus on if you're putting out a new product, if you're putting out a new service, if you're starting up a new business or a new line of business, from the inception, privacy protections should be embedded into the design, the implementation, the rollout, the assessment of the new thing going forward, so that ultimately we'd wind up instead of bolting things on in place to existing processes at a certain period of time we would have 10, 20 years out we'd have processes which were all designed with privacy in mind from the start. Next slide, please. A big part of what the FTC is trying to do in this report is to move other companies into the same space that financial industries and healthcare providers already occupy with respect to notice. The idea is to reduce the burden on the consumers, increase digital literacy, define certain commonly accepted practices that you don't have to tell people about. You don't have to get people's consent before providing information, for example, to law enforcement, subject to an accepted warrant. You don't have to get people's consent before using their information to transact a transaction they requested. However, for pretty much everything else, very much like in the healthcare space and in the financial industry space, you would need to let folks know what you're going to do with their information. There's very much a tension, as there always is with these notice regimes, between competing unrealistic expectations. They do want to reduce the burden on consumers, so notices should be, relatively short and easy to read. At the same time, the notices should, give the reader all the information about everything that could happen with their data, meaning, it would have to be complete and therefore probably rather long and technical. That tension is going to really how that plays out. The accommodation of those competing goals, we'll have to see. It'll be a big part of what the discussion will be, in the comment period to January 31st, and then moving forward. We can say all we like about consumer education, but the fact is, I still have to help my mom program her DVR, and she's an intelligent person. A lot of what we do with personal information is, in fact, extremely complex. Next slide, please. So as mentioned, there's this distinction between commonly accepted practices and non-commonly accepted practices. Commonly accepted practices, things that you don't particularly need consent for. Non-commonly accepted practices is everything else. And the FTC has cited a few specific examples of what are not commonly accepted practices, things for which you should get consumer consent. And it includes things like deep packet inspection by ISPs. People expect that websites will gather information about them when they go on the website, the FTC report says, but people don't expect that that level of scrutiny of their past activity as is associated with deep packet inspection. So again, and as well as the sharing of information from one party to another, potentially even affiliated parties, you may have to provide notice to the consumer. So these are things we're very familiar with, obviously in GLBA, in HIPAA. This is an attempt to move that notice framework out into the rest of the world. So that's the privacy by design and the consumer choice aspects of this. And I'll turn it over to Amy with respect to the do not track mechanism discussed in the report.
Thank you, Paul. Do not track, so to speak, is where the rubber hits the road in terms of those of us in Washington looking at the coordination amongst the agencies. The FTC report supported a do not track mechanism whereby consumers could identify websites through either a browser tool. They didn't go so far as to recognize a list. We're quite excited about the new technology powers at the FTC that recommended that Do Not Track is not so simple as a national Do Not Call list. But the FTC is recommending a browser mechanism whereby consumers or third-party groups could identify what it considers as tracking. It's important at this stage to identify that neither the FTC nor the Department of Commerce has really given us a definition of what constitutes tracking. However, both agencies have let us know that in both reports that they will distinguish the treatment of advertising versus the treatment of tracking. This is going to be just one of very many issues that will need the multifaceted areas of industry to comment upon. It's important to mention for Do Not Track that the FTC has recognized the industry efforts that are out there with both Mozilla and the Firefox browser, Google's incognito mode, and the new version of Microsoft IE9. However, all efforts, we do have statements by the FTC just this week retreating from their previous statements that they thought those efforts could be deemed adequate. And it's because neither of the three browser tools are dynamic enough to potentially encapsulate all of the ad servers as they're coming online, as they're changing their domains, and as they're manipulating themselves in order to be able to still distribute ads. So that's important for us to note because this is just a very recent retreat by Jessica Rich and a couple other members of the FTC. It's also important for us to note that in today's Department of Commerce report, it does not move as far as endorsing a do not track mechanism. So this is a clear area of disagreement between the two agencies. With that in mind, we're going to flip to the next slide, which is transparency. And the FTC report has made it clear that they would like privacy notices to be shorter and more standardized and to enable better comprehension and comparison of privacy practices. In this section, the FTC was referring to the GLBA standard forms that have been used. But the interesting thing that we note here at Reed Smith is as we're helping many companies develop their GLBA privacy policies, we have a good portion of them who are opting not to use the standard forms. And it's because the standard forms don't encapsulate the unique circumstances and characteristics of some particular privacy plans. So that may also be a very interesting point for comment for industry. Now, in addition to its support of standard forms, the FTC advised that they want companies to provide reasonable access to consumer data that they maintain, and the extent of the access should be proportionate to the sensitivity and nature of the data's use. That's very important because consumer access, other than in the state of California, is not a typical concept for corporate America. It's very interesting to note that the Department of Commerce itself takes also agrees with consumers having access to their data and also adds on additional data hygiene responsibilities as well. But back to the FTC report, the FTC has let us know that companies must provide prominent disclosures and obtain affirmative opt-in consent before using consumer data in a materially different manner than when the data was collected. That's a very old concept. We've already seen that in the behavioral advertising guidelines in previous, that we should be monitoring and keeping track of the versions of our privacy policies and obtaining opt-in consent for substantially different information collection practices. And the last point on this slide really goes back to Paul's discussion of education, and that it will be necessary for this effort, but also extremely expensive. It's important for us to point out that some organization, be it industry, be it an association, needs to take the responsibility or identify to these agencies how expensive and difficult it is going to be to get consumers educated to the level of digital literacy that's needed in in our current environment. And the term digital literacy has been bandied about by the current regulators, but none of which have stepped up to the table and identified how companies should actually go about their consumer education campaigns. To the next slide, if you would. In addition to the general concept of transparency, it was helpful for us to see that the FTC was not really endorsing opt-in versus opt-out. Their real concept was consumer understanding. So a carefully worded and clear opt-in notice, might be as effective as an opt-in notice, depending upon the circumstances. So what we don't want industry to take from this report is that everything's now going to be opt-in. It's not the case. We're still going to have to look at the data flows, look at the circumstances under which we're dealing with the data, the statutes that we're dealing with, and act accordingly. And on to the next slide. One interesting item that Vladek pointed out about a week ago is that mobile service privacy policies, privacy policies that are on WAP-enabled devices and on iPhone applications, need to be formatted in a substantially different standard than the typical privacy policy. And Vladek even mentioned the fact that one iPhone application privacy policy that he was looking at was over 134 pages. So the particular format and how a privacy policy may be streamlined for a mobile environment is of much interest to the FTC at the moment. And I'm going to turn it over to Chris Folina, also in an RGC office, to speak about the concurring opinion.
Thanks, Amy. The concurring opinions are, to me, the most interesting part of this report, and I think they illustrate why businesses need to comment and provide information to the FTC, because the commissioners certainly aren't in agreement. I think it's funny that they call them concurring opinions, but there's really not much in the concurring opinions that concur. They agree, I guess the extent of their agreement is that the report should have been done and that it's timely, but they really don't agree with much that's in it. The first concurring opinion is by Commissioner Kovacic. He states right in the front that he concurs with the release, but he does not endorse its content or its perspective. He thinks that the do not track system is premature, and he thinks we already have an existing framework of laws to deal with privacy rights, such as tort, property, causes of action, and contract law. He also suggests that the report is relying too heavily on what they think consumers want, or on a survey that that showed that consumers want privacy. I think we all know as businesses, it's not really clear. It's just not clear what consumers want. We know that consumers want services quickly. They want things to work. They will give up information at the drop of a dime if you give them something for free. And really, I think Facebook, with its with all of its privacy settings and changes, I think they've had some good consumer use of those new options, but not that much. I mean, relatively speaking, to the population that's out there, they don't have many people taking advantage of these privacy settings. Kovacic also questions the report's expanded concept of harm. Mark pointed this out in the beginning of the call. This concept is, of harm that the FTC poses is a little bit worrisome for businesses. He also lists a bunch of additional questions that he thinks companies should comment on, in addition to the 60-plus-some questions in Appendix A. He has an interesting view about do not track. I think very thoughtful. He questions the consequences and the enforcement of such a mechanism. Consumers want focused ads. They want good content, but who pays for it? And the model we have right now, advertisers pay for a lot. If we limit too much, it could have serious economic ramifications. Next slide. The second concurring opinion is similar. It concurs that the report is timely, but it suggests that the report is flawed, and argues that a new framework is really unnecessary. To support that argument, the commissioner points out that the FTC has never challenged a company's failure to offer a particular kind of choice, which I think is very interesting. So, the FTC hasn't really gone after a company for a bad opt-out or a misleading opt-in. So his point is, we can enforce what we have currently in effect today. We don't need a new framework. He, too, also questioned what consumers want and does not necessarily think that it's accurate to assert that a majority of consumers feel a particular way about privacy. And again, he also questions this expanded model of harm and points out, and this is another interesting point, he stated that the FTC has specifically advised Congress that absent deception, it will not enforce Section 5 against such intangible harm. I think that's an important footnote and one that I think companies should weigh in on. And finally, he says, the current choice mechanisms that we have with opt-outs and opt-ins, if they're done right, then there's no need to require more. And there's no reason to think that the models we have right now with choice and notice aren't working. I would say I would conclude by just saying you should read the concurring opinions because they're not long. The report's really long, but the concurring opinions are not long, and they're thought-provoking, and I encourage you all to read them. So you're probably all wondering, well, what does this mean and what's going to become of this report? And I think Amy now will try to read the tea leaves a bit.
And I always get the fun job because at this point the tea leaves are ever-changing as we read more of the Commerce Report. Before we move on too much, let me just flip over to the next slide and talk about timing. The Commission staff is seeking, the FTC Commission staff is seeking comments by January 31st of the month on the proposed framework. Their Appendix A to the report is 50-plus questions, but we want to remind you that there are additional questions posed by Commissioner Kovacic. And, you know, as we've said, parties are encouraged to raise issues. Based on the comments received, the Commission is going to be issuing a final report in the summer of 2011. We would recommend that clients think about their information disclosure transactions kind of in Q1 and Q2 before the issuance of a final report. But on to the next slide as to what will become of this. Okay, we've actually covered that, and then that we can actually flip over to the next slide. All right. What I think is the most interesting portion of the FTC report is how other agencies and the administration is going to be dealing with this. At the moment, we have several procedural unknowns, the first being other agency buy-in. As I read more and more of the Commerce Report, it is quite clear to me that Commerce is taking a much different perspective than the FTC. And to give you a bit of a summary of that perspective, I'm just going to interject a very brief highlight of what the contents of the Commerce Report. First, you know, we did see notice transparency and choice in the FTC report. Commerce goes a bit beyond that and gives us fair information practice principles, including data accountability and hygiene, which will be a very difficult requirement for those who aren't aggressively scrubbing their data at the moment or have no means of tracking how their data is scrubbed. It's also important to note that in addition to the three prongs that the FTC has identified, the Commerce Report has identified privacy audits as a means to ensure accountability. I know many companies are already auditing, but as we all know, in an audit context, an auditor will find something, and even the best laid privacy and cybersecurity group and plan. And it's simply because we are in a multi-layered, hybrid, multi-jurisdictional environment. So the audit concept might be something that people would like to comment upon in the Commerce proceeding and also advocate possibly against in the FTC proceeding, which will be the enforcement arm. In addition to the fair information practice principles, the Department of Commerce is very supportive of self-regulatory codes of conduct. And to give you an example of that that's more concrete, in the FTC report, actually condemned a bit the behavioral advertising self-regulatory program that is being developed by the ANA and the IAB and the AAAF. But in the Department of Commerce's report, and around the middle of, I think it was page 20 or page 30, they discuss how the disclosure efforts of the ANA and the IAB with the behavioral advertising self-regulatory mechanism should be applauded. So it's just a much different look on the nature of privacy, and Commerce is appearing to be much, much more supportive of self-regulation. So the third point, we had a bit of a bandy regarding global interoperability. I wanted to add in the fact that we've been speaking with Department of Commerce staff, and this is an unknown. You know, if industry would like the carrot of more global harmonization, it's something that you have to advocate for, because there are a number of staffers in commerce that are quite skeptical of a harmonization of standards. And then lastly, the report supports a national breach standard that would be on the same vein of the Rush bill that passed the House and was pending in the Senate in the 111th Congress. You know, as we think about the FTC and the Department of Commerce, I want to make sure that we don't have tunnel vision, because privacy is only one bite at the apple, and it's a very, I don't want to say insignificant, but it is a very small piece of the overall pie. We will be looking at the FTC, the Department of Commerce, the Federal Communications Commission, and its cybersecurity report that is going to be upcoming, the DHS, and the Department of Energy, and HHS, because all of these agencies, the OCC, all of these agencies create the privacy-specific guidance for our industry sectors. And what will be very interesting to us is to see how much of the privacy and cybersecurity guidance will also be percolating on the Hill. We had heard announcements as late as last week that Senator Kerry's staff have basically stated that they will not be supporting overarching privacy and cybersecurity legislation, and instead will be supporting more targeted and streamlined legislation. And that will mean, again, a multi-layered, multi-pronged legislative approach. So what we can say here is that we have much more to watch than just the FTC and the Department of Commerce. This is a very complex area. Much of the last point I've already touched upon a bit. With Do Not Track, we're going to be looking both at the FTC and with legislative solutions. Standardized policies, I think, it's just going to be a difficult and a real need of an area for comment, because I think the GLBA policies threw most of us for a loop, and that we should be looking at mobile streamlined policies. And with that in mind, what I'd like to do is turn it over to Mark Melodia, who's our moderator, who will address some of your questions.
Thanks, Amy. I think I need to turn it back to Claudine. Our
Thanks.
Operator, who, if she has any questions or can queue those up, that would be great. Otherwise, I can pose a question or two myself.
All right, thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to register a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. You will hear a 3-tone prompt to acknowledge your request. Should you wish to withdraw your registration, please press the 1 followed by a 3. If you're using a speakerphone, please lift your handset before entering your request. And I have no questions at this time.
Okay, well, let me start with one, and let's see if we get one while we talk. Maybe, Chris, you could start with this. Really just looking for a bit of a summary. We've touched on a lot of different points, but you know, if you were talking to a specific client, and I understand, you know, this could vary by size, industry, et cetera, but if there is a client sort of general advice as to what to do while we're in this interim comment period, which looks as if it could be 4, 5, 6 months, what would you be doing if you were our client?
Well, I think first I'd pull back a little bit and I'd take a look at my privacy program in-house. And what I'd say is to myself, do we have the right personnel? Do we have the right administrative setup? You know, CPO, if you're a big enough company, most of the companies on this call already are entrenched in privacy and have these sorts of frameworks. But it's a good time to think about that in any event. Does your CPO report up the right way and the like? Also, take a look at your data collection practices holistically. Think about how you're using information that you have on consumers right now and think about your ideas for using information about consumers in the future. And for potential business opportunities that you're developing now, you need to be thinking about that, because you don't want to waste a lot of money, spend a lot of cycles building products, your product development phases, and then you come you get ready to launch in Q4 11, and the rug gets pulled out from under you. You've just spent a lot of money developing a new product or service that the FTC all of a sudden says, well, you need opt-in consent for that. That's real problematic. And I guess that dovetails into the last point, which is really consider commenting. I know a lot of people have industry groups. I know a lot of people rely on their industry groups. That doesn't always work. Sometimes it does. But you need to think about yourselves individually. There are a lot of hot-button topics here that companies need to be thinking about. What data is sensitive or not sensitive? I mean, there are a lot of uses of data that companies can make use of, a lot of data in aggregated form, for example, that doesn't necessarily identify an individual. And it's important that you comment about those kinds of things, because that's a way that companies make money with the data that they have, and there's no reason why you can't continue to do that.
Chris, this is Paul. I just wanted to underscore that point, because I think it's awful important. I mean, one of the foundational assumptions in a lot of data protection programs is that you can have, you know, de-identified personal information, and you can use it in ways that are, that meet basic privacy principles, that nevertheless allow you to, you know, optimize use of the data. The idea in this report, if I had to pick one idea in this report that I think, you know, industry in general, businesses in general might want to push back on, it's the idea that, you know, the distinction between, personal information and personally identifiable information is one of, diminishing relevance. I think it certainly is true that, you know, we've seen more and more ways to link up data and to, in other words, re-identify data. But I think by no means are we at a place where, essentially all information should be assumed identifiable. This is really a place where the technical, expertise of users, sharers, gatherers of information can really be of benefit to policymakers, helping guide that discussion and make clear that there still is a significant, important, material, legal difference between legal and factual difference between types of information that essentially you don't have a privacy concern about, and other types of information that you do.
Yeah, and I think it makes sense to better understand than any of us may today sort of what our organizations are doing and are planning to do, as Chris just indicated, over the next year with consumer data in case the recommendations or many of the recommendations in something like their current form start to become enforceable later next year. I don't think we're recommending, nor did we during uncertainty of red flags or other changes, that everybody run out and change their business direction or their business model or all their policies and procedures. I think the time would be better spent both trying to make the current draft report something that is more reasonable for your business and yet still consistent with consumer privacy, and to spend your time, getting to know even better than you do today what your organization is doing and planning to do with such data, particularly obviously in the online spaces that we've been most focused on in this report and this discussion.
And Mark, just one more point on that. I would say that, I've heard the commissioners talking in different forums, and in response to questions that came from companies, every time a question was asked by someone in industry, the FTC said, hey, we really need to hear from you. So not to overstate the point, but it's important. And another example, Paul was talking about a really important one. Another one is this idea of commonly accepted practices or non-commonly accepted practices. I think businesses, it would be really important for you to take a look at that section and then think about your uses, because I don't know that the FTC got them all. And what I mean is, the idea that non-commonly accepted practices require some form of choice. I think that list, if that model stays, I think that list of what is deemed commonly accepted or not commonly accepted is very important.
Yeah, and you know, again, sort of from a litigator's perspective, I view this as a split court with two clear dissents. You know, whatever they're called, they're not really concurrences other than they liked the fact that there was a report and they liked the color of the paper. So, as a litigator, I would encourage an appeal when you have this split a court, and particularly where the court supplies a list of several dozen questions for you to comment on and ask about in Appendix A. And I think you've heard some others on this phone call, and as was suggested earlier, there's some others in the so-called concurrences themselves. Claudine, do we have any other questions queued up?
No, I show no questions.
Okay. Well, I think we should adjourn then. We've taken about an hour of everybody's time. I think we will send to everybody on this call, who I view as having opted in, a link to the Commerce report, so that you have that at your fingertips if you haven't already pulled it up as we've been talking, so that everybody has that, because that will be tomorrow morning's news. But we will try to get that out to you, and we look forward to continuing to work with you and talk to you about these issues over the next several months. Thanks for your time today. Bye-bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude the conference call for today. We thank you for your participation, and we ask that you please disconnect your line. Thank you, everyone, and have a great day.